Good morning.
Thanks
again for the invitation to join you here today. I think this is like my fourth or fifth year, and it's always such a pleasure. And I spoke with Billy recently, and this year, you know, every year at this time when I give a sermon, I make fun of Billy during the beginning of my sermon, as we know. And so I spoke to him, and I pledged to Billy this year I would not make fun of him at the beginning. At the beginning of my sermon. So just to let you know that I keep my pledges. So many of you may know or may not that I have a beautiful young daughter. She is the most beautiful woman on planet Earth, just to let you know. And she is a really talented artist. It's quite amazing. I mean, you never know the skills that they're going to show. So, you know, she names her works of art. Her latest work of art is really beautiful. It's called Long Lines on the Brand New Couch, and it's a really beautiful peach. It matches her last few pieces, long lines of color on the walls, long lines of color on Daddy's showcases, and her newest piece, which I call Rainbow Bright Amira, which is her name, who needs to take a bath right now. And so, it's amazing. If you didn't know, the greatest invention, by the way, in modern human times, and that is bathtub markers. It's amazing. You paint in the bathtub. It's genius, although her works in the bathtub are not nearly as valuable as her previous works because the long lines of color on the brand new couch has turned out to be very expensive, and I don't know, but not as expensive as the long lines on the wall, which is even more so. And I want you to know, I wasn't equal to my daughter as an artist. By the way, my daughter has already, thank God, she's two, has already decided to give up art for medical school, so I'm really happy about that. Yeah, that's awesome. So I didn't show the talent my daughter has for art, but I was a pretty decent artist. I remember my favorite work when I was a kid was, and this is what I titled it, was called Blue Clouds, Two-Dimensional House, stick people, brown ground, green flowers, and giant patches of uncolored white area. And I know it's a title filled with great yet subtle meaning, but it was an amazing piece that I did. And I look back at that piece and so many like it, and I say to myself, how could I do that? I was a child, I'm coloring, and yet I leave this entire space on the paper completely empty. You got the sky, and you got the ground, and white space in the middle with nothing there. It all looked normal to me back then, and I don't understand why. I understand now why my parents sent me to so many vision tests and all those therapy sessions. But I look back, and I say to myself now, there are no white patches in the world. Everything is filled up. And it's amazing. As a child, I saw the world this way, and I can prove it too. The first law of thermodynamics states that energy can't be created or destroyed. It can only change forms. Now, unlike all of you, I have absolutely no idea what thermodynamics are and what it means, but I could have looked it up, but why bother? I have heard the word before. It sounds pretty impressive, so now I've just proven something to you, which I'm really appreciative of. But when it comes to religion, I can prove it as well, because the mystics say, and this is in the Kabbalah, which is Jewish mysticism, that God is everywhere and everything. And that in order for God to create us, God had to diminish God's self and fill that blank space with the universe we know. And that's where we are today. So in other words, the last time there was a blank space, a white space in the universe, was in Genesis 1:1, where the translation I have says, when God began to create heaven and earth, the earth being unformed and void. So that was the last time in existence there was an actual void in the world. And since that time, there's never been one. And so when somebody says, is the glass half full or half empty, the answer is obvious. The answer is, the glass is always 100% full. It's never empty, and it's impossible for it to be empty. I don't know who created that statement or who patented it, but he or she was completely wrong. So I've proven to you scientifically and religiously that there are no white patches. Everything is full. The glass is always full. Then why then do I often feel such a void in my life? If there are no voids in the world, it's impossible to have a void, yet why do I feel one? What I see people who are wealthy and seemingly have everything in the world commit suicide. Why so many people are so sad and distraught when they have so much? Why do we all feel there is a void when there is no such thing in the universe unless you were here on day one, and which most of us were not? So what are the voids we feel? I personally worry constantly about paying for my children to go to college and to medical school, both of them. I worry about my health because my family never had any. And I worry about my job and the strain of running two houses of worship. And that is really stressful for me, Mikveh Israel and Asbury. It's so hard. And these are real issues, but people who don't have these issues feel voids. People who have good jobs and wonderful family and run their Methodist and Jewish house of worship perfectly still feel the void. So what is the void? I don't know, but I have a guess. A friend of mine, Tom Kohler, many of you know, wrote an article, and he said, people are increasingly writing about the impact that a loss of community and connection is having in today's America. He quotes Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, argues in his book, Them, Why We Hate Each Other and How to Heal, it's not politics that's dividing Americans and bringing down them. It's loneliness. New York Times columnist David Brooks closes his November 29th column, It's Not the Economy, Stupid, by saying, it's not jobs, jobs, jobs anymore. It's relationships, relationships, relationships. Both mirror something our friend David Putnoyex has been saying for decades. Loneliness is the only disability. We are lonely. There is something missing in our lives. There is a void that creates an empty feeling, a white space that is perceived, even though we know there are no white spaces. The glass is always 100% full, but in our world, we are taught that it isn't. We actually may be connected to our church, or if we're very lucky, our synagogue. But we feel distant sometimes. We may have a wonderful spouse and children, but we believe that we should have better ones, or worse, that I should have yours. We feel lonely for family and friends, even if we have them. If we don't, we feel the inability to find them, or sometimes we just don't think they exist at all, even though we know there are no white spaces in the universe. The irony here, though, is very clear. Using this quote by Eugene Borowitz, a wonderful Jewish scholar, he writes, we may feel we are alone, but if we were totally cut off from an awareness of what lies beyond, chances are we would be perfectly content. There would be no reason to question ourselves or our existence, no drive to continuously experience more. The void, or the perceived void, is cagey and ironic. We have to believe there is a higher power that connects us for us to believe that we are not connected. Because if we don't believe we're supposed to be connected, there are no issues. But we believe we are supposed to be connected, and that is the irony. We may believe in God, but we still feel that we're not connected to anybody, even though we know there is no white spaces. So there's a wonderful Orthodox woman named Shifra Hendry, and I hope I pronounced her name correctly, who said, in the secret void, the Kabbalah of self-discovery says, we are not cut off, even if we feel it, because there's always a glimmer of the infinite light from creation that surrounds and permeates each person who walks on this earth. This light is what gives us the profound sense there is something else out there. Only the something doesn't always feel like an actual something. It often feels like something is missing, a void. This void, she says, pulls us sometimes in the wrong direction. The direction of the bigger, the flashier toy. The direction of sadness or anxiety or depression or eating too much or drinking too much. Whatever it takes to avoid facing the threatening insubstantiability of it all. The idea of God is very complicated. God says we're connected. It says it in the Bible. You should read it once in a while. It's a fabulous book. But we still don't feel connected because we know we should. So what is the answer? Obviously, more God. I am a rabbi in a church. Do not say that I did not say the first answer is God. That is always the first answer. But how can I be more specific? Well, first of all, in the realm of science, a question may be asked and an answer given according to Abraham Joshua Heschel. One answer for all humankind. That's science. In the realm of religion, the question must be faced and the answer given in every individual soul. So there's not one right answer on how to fill the perceived void. So we have to find it ourselves. What is the single best way to fill the perceived void in our life? It's so obvious. Wow moments. That is number one. That is the number one way to do it. And what's the second best way? Wow moments too. That's the second best way, which you can find on Barnes & Noble website, at Amazon. And if you buy it on Amazon and write this code phrase, you get 15% off. Billy Hester is the second best looking holy man on the block. So that's the best way. But there are other ways to fill the void of loneliness that is perceived. I asked my wife a question the other day. We're talking about being honest. And I asked her, have I ever lied to you? And she looked me straight in the face and said, I've never caught you in a lie. I'm not sure if she understood the double meaning of her answer. But possibly. How do we solve the puzzle of the void that isn't a void? Henry adds, but as uncomfortable and threatening as it can feel, if you are willing to face the discomfort, to stop running and listen, you can begin to explore the secret of the void, to expand your ability to see and hear things that lie outside your normal range. In other words, if we are wise, we will sit with the void, admit we have the void, and then legitimately look for a way to fill the perceived void. It is up to each of us individually. We are trained by television, the news, magazines, ad commercials, and magazines to look for the more, to look for the other, to be unappreciative of what we have because we have to have something else. A new religion, a new wife, a new husband, new kids, a new way to look at the world. I need new friends. I am so lonely because I don't have what I need to fill it. But we have to admit that we are lonely for God, for family, for connectivity, often when we already have it. But we still have to look for the ways to fill it. We have to find ways to find connectivity to the world, to end the loneliness. Now, wow moments is a wonderful way, but I'll tell you this, waiting for the wow moments is not. It's like only praying when you're in the Himalayas and you see the beautiful highest mountains of the world. If you only pray when you see the beautiful mountains of the Himalayas, guess what? You're only going to pray once in your life or twice in your life. And if you live in the Himalayas, guess what? You're going to pray to see the flatlands of a long distant land called Savannah. And you're only going to pray the times you see Savannah. We have to be proactive and go out and admit we are lonely, even if we shouldn't be, and find ways to fix it. The scholar Eugene Borowitz, who I mentioned earlier, tells the story of how citizens in a small village wanted the government to remove a giant boulder that blocked the only entrance to the community. And the government, a very wise government in this story, told them that first you need to chip away day by day until the boulder shrinks to something more manageable. Then we'll carry it away. We can't expect God to fill our perceived voids unless we go out and pursue a way to do it. If we wait for something miraculous to happen, we are going to be waiting a long time. We need to go to church. Yes, a rabbi is telling you, go to church. Of course, I'm preaching to the choir, and in this case, it really is a choir because you all have beautiful voices. We need to find ways to better our community. Take time to learn to appreciate what we have and go find ways to enjoy it. See a therapist if we can. They are very helpful. See a religious leader, preferably someone of the Jewish religion. We have to be proactive because it's amazing to me to watch people I see who have everything and yet feel like they have nothing or giant voids. And they are not bad people. These are good people who have wealth and family, but yet there is something about being human that leads us to believe we have a void when it's impossible. In Violence Unveiled, Gil Bowley wrote, "Don't ask yourself when you're trying to fill this void what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go and do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Find ways to fill the void that help us come alive. We need to look for those connections, and not everyone has the same one. If you need to volunteer, if you need to spend more time with your family, if you need to go to church more often. I had a friend who just died this week who I grew up with. It was only a year younger than me. I hadn't spoken to her in years, and I only found out she was sick the day before she died. And she was very young. She was only 47. And both her parents had died young as well, so she always worried about that. So what did she do? She devoted her entire life to helping women by working at women's shelters her whole life, not knowing if she was going to live a long life, certainly hoping so. So she devoted every moment she could because she thought her time was limited. Unfortunately, it was. But the way she lived her life was not unfortunate at all. If we wait, we're going to wait a long time. The white spaces don't exist. And sometimes we, as people of the church, wait for the next world where we'll find all the answers. Well, that is a mistake, because I believe God wants us to chip away at the boulder in this world, and then maybe God will then help us find the answers. It's coincidental that on Yom Kippur, which is a holiday coming up, I know where a lot of my congregants are here today, so they, of course, will not have to come to Yom Kippur services, because this is my Yom Kippur sermon that I'm practicing on you. I wouldn't say guinea pigs because they're not kosher, but that's pretty much what we have here. So on Yom Kippur, we recite a prayer using language that reminds me of what I just spoke about. It says, "At this time of year, which is the Day of Atonement, let all our vows and oaths, all the promises we make and the obligations we incur to you, O God, between this Yom Kippur and the next, be null and void. Should we, after honest effort, find ourselves unable to fulfill them, then may we be absolved of them." We ask God to make the issues that are weighing us down in life disappear, make them null and void. In other words, we ask God to make our perceived voids null and void. Now, this is an unfinished High Holiday sermon because I'm not sure about all the answers, and I think I need assistance. So if you have any answers as how we fill the perceived void, please tell me instead of Billy. And then I may even use them in my High Holiday sermon in Mikveh Israel. And as I approach the Day of Atonement and honesty is the best policy, I want to tell you that I will give you absolutely no credit whatsoever in that sermon. But again, it's Yom Kippur. I'll be absolved. So today I'm getting a little more esoteric than I usually am because sometimes I feel lonely and I think about it because I have a beautiful wife, a wonderful baby, another baby on the way, and it's all so exciting to me. So I wonder myself, how can I feel a void when I have more than I could have ever asked for in life? And the answer is I'm human and we all have the perceived voids in our lives. And that doesn't mean they're not real, because if we perceive them, they are. But I ask us this year to be a little more proactive, first by honestly asking ourselves, what is the perceived void? What is that white space? Trying to determine what it is, and then going out and doing everything we can to fill it. And that means coming here, going somewhere else, doing whatever you can, because we only have one life as far as we know. Some of them are longer, some of them are unfortunately shorter, but it's incumbent on us that we don't wait to fulfill our dreams, that we don't wait to fill in the perceived void. So I want to wish us all the best for the Jewish New Year. I hope to see many of you in our High Holiday services. And if you don't come, that's okay. I will just make you feel guilty for the year. May God give us the opportunity to make all of those perceived voids void in our lives. Amen, and thank you again.